We're here because we are Unitarian Universalists, and we are here because we want to be, or we love being Unitarian Universalists with you. Now, some of us here are not Unitarian Universalists. So when we say we love being Unitarian Universalists with you, we're not simply talking about Unitarian Universalists, we're talking about everyone. And everyone who says we love being here with you, even though they're not Unitarian Universalists, from their own traditions and their own spirits, they are also saying we love being here with you. So let's simply say together, we love being here with you. We love being here with you. Yes. Two nights ago, at our intergenerational dance, one of you came up to me and said, "At some point, are you going to pull this all together and tell us how to take this back to our congregation that wasn't here? How do we take this back to our own congregation?" So yesterday, when I read this statement to you, I said, "You will have to do three things to prepare yourself. You will have to develop your spiritual vision. You will have to stay the course of the journey by practicing your breath meditation. And you will have to snap your fingers in affirmation of your work, and also as a reminder of the work that you are to do." We did a magnificent job, magnificent work. We did it together. And so at the end of this, quite exhilarated, I said, "Are you ready to take the work back to your congregation?" And there was a resounding no. So, we start anew. Today we will take several steps together. First, I would like to show you what I believe you already know how to do. I would like to show you what I believe you already know how to do. And for this demonstration, first we'll have a group from the afternoon talkback session present a skit about what happens to Schmidt when he visits us.
Inclusive church. So if any of you who are not in our Good morning. Good morning. Olive. Olive, how nice to see you.
Well, I struggled a little to get here this morning, but you know, when it gets cold, why, those old aches and pains come back.
How's your hip?
Well, it's giving me a little trouble.
Well, but can we get you a special chair?
Can I help take her?
Yeah, thank you.
Come on. How are you doing this morning?
Mary, Mary, how are you this morning?
I'm good.
Don't upstage me. It's so good to see you.
It's good to see you.
And you brought Sandy.
I did.
Oh, wonderful. Hello, Sandy. How are you?
I'm dry.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Wonderful.
Where's my teddy bear? I lost my teddy
Hello.
Bear.
Mal, this is Warren Schmidt, and this is Ndugo. Could you help them into our RE program and see if Frank and Ndugo are going to want to be an RE today or if they're going to want to be part of the service?
Well, let me see. You're Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
And Ndugo, do you speak English? Not. Oh, that's helpful to know. Is it okay if I take him?
Well, we'll see how he feels about it.
Frank may want to go with him.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Sandra, are you in charge of RE today?
I am. I'm the greeter and in charge of RE. How do you do? And I'm doing a lot of stuff. How do you do? My name is Sandra. Just don't drag him away, Reverend Mel. Just go sit down. My name is Sandra.
I'm Warren Schmidt.
May I use your first name?
Yes,
and it's Warren.
Yes.
And who is this?
This is my son, Nangugu.
Nangugu or Ndugu?
Ndugu.
Ndugu? Ndugu?
Yeah.
I'm Sandra. And you're Warren's son.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
It's good to have you here. Would you like to come in? Warren, we're so happy to have you. And we have some children here. Now, you are very welcome either to have Ndugu with us in the congregation, or he can go to RE with the children, or whatever's comfortable for you.
Well, let's see how he feels about just doing what.
That's fine with us. You'll notice that we have some teddy bears around the sanctuary. We're happy to have you. And we hope you'll give us more than one chance. We do different things. Reverend Susan.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to High Hopes Congregation. Sounds like the kids are still getting organized a little bit for RE here. All right, we will begin. Welcome to High Hopes. Wherever you come from, wherever you are on your journey today, whatever your identity, whomever you love, and however you make family, welcome to High Hopes. And we will light our chalice, and we have story time, and we have the kids go off, and some of them may stay very over here in the corner. And we are going to have joys and sorrows. Thank you for everyone who signed the joys and sorrow book in the vestry. To any of you who are new, if you have concerns that you would like to share with the congregation, there is a large book in the vestry. Please add your notes, and they will be included today. If you look in your order of service, we have announcements. And our joys and sorrows today at the caring table, we will have cards for Sandra, who has been recognized for her contribution to the ACLU 20 years. Thank you. And we have a letter of condolence to Beth, who lost her grandmother. Please sign the card, whether you know Beth personally or not. It is important.
And now we'll hold another little part of the service, and we'll have our moment of meditation. Om. The offertory will be shared. We are proud to announce in our congregation that the church is supported by our pledges, and that our offertories are given each week to one of our numerous social justice projects. If you check in your order of service, you will see to which one of our organizations we will be donating this Sunday's offertory. Wonderful music. Generosity flowing out from our hearts. Wonderful smiles on our faces as we share our bounty. Thank you so much. And now for the sermon. And the sermon is going to be intellectually stimulating and personally gratifying. There will be moments of humor and not a hint of condescension, sarcasm, or irony. Well, maybe a little irony, but no condescension or sarcasm. Now, will everyone please stand as willing as able for the closing blessing? Our wonderful choir, the best choir in the land, is going to sing. And join hands if you are comfortable doing so. Find whatever way in your heart you are can be a member of community, and we will have the closing blessing. It is the most beautiful choir in the land. Blessed be. Everyone, hope to see you in coffee hour after church. I'll see you in the reception line.
Thank you. Who is our committee? This is yours.
And of course, we hang around for coffee hour, talking to our friends and our to-be friends. And then, in the interest of time, coffee hour is over.
Warren, my name's Marilyn. Some of us like to go to lunch after coffee hour, and we wondered if you were interested, available, and of course, your son.
Well, I'm not sure what Ngugu would be able to do during lunch. I think possibly it'd be best for us to go on home today, and we'll see how he feels about that kind of thing later.
Excellent. We're here, and you're there.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you very much, group. Thank you very, very much. Okay. Now, I will tell you my error that you pointed out to me yesterday when you gave me the resounding no. When the woman asked me if I was going to pull all of this together, and tell us how to take this back to a congregation that wasn't here, I thought this pertained to the work, my theme speeches, and the work that I've been doing in the afternoon. This pertained to SI. And so what was portrayed here was SI. That's what you do here. You welcome the stranger in our midst, at SI. You expect to have a religious service as a part of your daily life, at SI. You are a large, small group ministry program at SI. You are a large, small group ministry program at SI. Because you have an opening ritual, the morning service, a check-in at breakfast, a group activity, several of them, a check-out at dinner, and then again, later and later and later, and the closing ritual, your Vesper service. You are practicing small group ministry. Years ago, I became part of and helped start something called the Center for Community Values, because it encourages small group ministry. And if you go to our website, this is what you will find. The Center for Community Values encourages and equips people to create and sustain relational communities where justice, democracy, and human dignity prevail. In a relational community, people experience their connections. That's what you do here at SI. To one another, to other human beings, to one another, and find a place to live their values in an atmosphere of justice, democracy, and human dignity. That's what you do here. Each person is treated equitably. Each person participates with a voice and a vote, and each person is respected for her or his intrinsic worth. That's what you do here at SI. In a relational community, interdependence, interconnection, and mutuality are valued. That's what you do here at SI. But somehow, this is not what occurs for many of you in your home congregations. I cannot tell you how many of you have said to me this week, SI is my real congregation. Some of you have said, it's my only congregation. And some of you have said, oh, I have a congregation at home, but I'm lonely. I'm quoting you. I'm lonely. In other words, those of us, many of us in our home congregations, seem to be part of a wonderful community. Seem to be, to quote Warren Schmidt's friend Ray at his retirement party, a very rich man, a very rich woman, a very rich child. But we don't feel that way internally. In our home congregation, for many of us, we do not feel at home, but we go along to get along because it's the only home we have. So your question is, how do we take SI home?
I have 9 answers, 9 steps for you. 9 steps. But I'll start with a statement that is in one of the theology workshops that I'm working on for the UUA that I'll tell you about later. And it's the story which I've told before, so perhaps some of you have heard it. Several years ago at a New England church, I spent an evening talking with people about starting a small group ministry program. And I encouraged the people who'd been gathered together to simply get together for meals, sign up simply to go to a meal, have a meal together, and to talk about their unmet needs for community in their own congregation. One of the most respected elder statesmen of the church stood up, and he slowly walked to the front of the assembly, faced his friends and fellow congregants, and said he was interested in joining such a group. He had wanted something like this for years, he said, because he was lonely. He said, "I do not have any friends." Waves of shock rolled through the gathering. How could he be lonely? He was a revered and beloved member of the congregation, a pillar of the church. Many people expressed incredulity. When the group quieted down, the man spoke up again, saying, "Every man in the room who is my age knows what I am talking about. Our social upbringing has taught us not to talk about our feelings. We are not supposed to be emotionally vulnerable or close to anyone except our wives." He was Warren Schmidt. We are Warren Schmidt. We are the stranger knocking on the door, trying to get into our own congregations. And so, I felt the man's vulnerability. I could feel his vulnerability because his heart spoke the hidden language of my own heart: loneliness. My own social upbringing had taught me not to talk about my feelings to anyone. I had learned to be emotionally invulnerable and close to everyone. But now, here in the midst of this gathered community, someone so much like myself had stepped forward and said, "I'm lonely." He did not step forward as an authority figure or as someone whose racial identity or class status was at issue. He stepped forward to talk about his own unmet needs for intimacy. His story was my story. My story was his story. He had heard a call and he responded. All of us in the room were in the presence of an open space, an opened heart, a change of heart, a call for healing that could not be performed by oneself, because only a community can save a human soul. Human salvation is not a solo act. So, this man was prompted by a longing for an uplifting change of heart. He disclosed what he felt, loneliness, and what he longed for, a religious community of care and compassion that would shift his feelings to a heartfelt experience of religious community. A major function of small group ministries is to create an expansive ethos, atmosphere, sentiment of care and compassion as a Unitarian Universalist spiritual practice by paying attention to shifting emotions bagged feelings, schmitten emotions, by practicing spiritual vision, seeing beyond belief, because a change of heart is the foundation of religious experience. In and of itself, it is not a religious experience, but it's the foundation or the very possibility of that. The congregation takes that possibility, takes that longing, takes that change of heart and transforms it through its ethos of caring and compassion into a religious sentiment, like awe. A religious conviction that's Unitarian Universalist or Buddhist or Judaic. This is because it takes a religious community to raise a human emotion religiously. Again, it takes a religious community to raise a human emotion religiously. What I have been trying to talk with you about all week is the human emotion, the way we go back and find them in order to renew them so they can move forward again as a spiritual practice. We are very good about our zone of freedom, for doctrinal freedom, but we've forgotten the other two elements of personal experience: a shift in emotions, the longing for upturned feeling, a renewed feeling, in the context, the third element, of an ethos, an atmosphere of caring. Small relational groups focus on spiritual vision, focus on the heart, not as therapy, but just to see life itself emerging again. And because it's a gathered community of care and compassion, that opening, that open heart, that broken heart is held and nurtured such that it experiences an infinite love or awe or some other emotion that is explained then in our tradition within the space of doctrinal freedom. At the Summer Institute, you practice this. This is what you want to take home. What I've been trying to do is to give you the vocabulary, the conceptual vocabulary for the emotional context of what you're doing as a religious practice, because emotions, the change of heart, is the foundational reference for liberal religion, and we are a liberal religious tradition. Thus, not God, not the Bible, not revelation, not church tradition, not doctrinal claims, such as the first reference for religious experience, makes the tradition conservative or orthodox. We're liberal because we make personal experience the foundation of religious experience. The uplifted heart, the possibility of that, the longing for that within a gathered community which creates liturgies and rituals to take that and hone it and nurse it and transform it into a religious sentiment of the specific community. We're Unitarian. All religious traditions do this in one way or another. We're Unitarian Universalists because we do it in the space of doctrinal freedom. You are here at SI because as a gathered community, living together, eating together,
playing together. You nurture your emotional needs as a religious practice. The only thing I've been trying to do is to say, conceptually, pay attention to what you are doing. You are focusing on your emotional needs, the needs of the human heart, which is what religions do, because the major focus, the major function of a religious community is to organize human emotions. So that you recognize someone from your own community before the person speaks, based upon the way he or she is dressed, based upon how close or far the person stands from you, based upon how the body's held, based upon gestures. All of this is emotional acculturation process, which is what religions do. We have forgotten these two aspects of what we do as a religious movement because we had to clarify the doctrinal issues. We had to put the issues on the couch and say, okay, these are problematic. The fall of man, I don't think so. Doctrine of original sin, I don't think so. Trinity, you can believe it, but it's not going to be our overall claim. So we focus on the intellectual issues and we forgot that which they presuppose, which is a gathered community focusing on being a beloved community. That whole schmitten feelings. That's what you do here. So why isn't it safe at home for you to do this? You can do it here, but why not at home? Not going to get into that because there are many, many answers to the question. The question you have asked me is, how do we take this home? There are 9 things that you can do. 1. Download the roadmap. Go to the Center for Community Values website. Google it, the Center for Community Values. And even though we're inoperative now, we're on hiatus, the website is still there and something called the roadmap, developing a roadmap to Covenant Group Ministry. It's a 32-page pamphlet or booklet on the home page. Click that on and download it. Developing a roadmap to Covenant Group Ministry. It's 32 pages. So 1, download the roadmap and read it. That's still part of 1. 2, because I tell you, you'll have to take my word for it until you've read this document. What you're doing at SI is what we call small relational groups. And you'll see all of the practices laid out in this booklet that you're doing here. 2, meet with your minister. Senior minister, minister of religious education, director of religious education with your minister. And tell your minister that you'd like for your minister to read the book because you're interested in perhaps forming some small relational groups, small group ministry programs of this type in the congregation. And you'd like to try maybe one or something like that. Download the roadmap and read it. 2, meet with your minister. 3, ask your minister to call the religious education department that heads up the Tapestry series, a new theological series, a new series of religious education programming. And one series is called What Moves Us, which I've written, I'm completing now. And it lays out, it consists of 10 workshops
starts with an emotion and then looks at the way in which a particular Unitarian or Universalist or Unitarian Universalist used his or her theological lens to handle that emotion. And the participants in the workshop identify an experience in which that emotion was raised up, and then they study the way in which this particular theologian or minister or ethicist used his or her theological lens to help us understand this emotion. And then at the end, the participants decide whether it's helpful for them today. And thus they're learning about, you're learning about Unitarian Universalist theological history focused on the foundation of our experiences. And at the same time, you're getting tools to figure out how you should could handle your emotions as Unitarian Universalists. Ask your minister to contact the Religious Education Department, this is 3, at the UUA, to say perhaps you might be interested, your congregation might be interested in either being a test market for this, because the first thing we're going to do is just test this in a few markets. Or when it's finally ready, perhaps by next GA, you would like to participate in it. The link here is that this small group, this theological series, we want to link up as preparation for small group ministry, so that the workshop participants will segue into a small group. And small group ministries for us in this way pertains one other element that's not here at SI, it doesn't have to be, which is that each small group, as a group, several times a year, does something as a group in service to the wider community, either within the congregation or beyond the doors of the congregation. So, okay, that's the third thing. Fourth, read my essay that's in the bookstore that gives you systematic, scientific, neuroscientific analysis of the foundation of liberal faith. And the neuroscientist didn't set out to, in this way, just clarify Schleiermacher and the Unitarian Universalist Association of Liberal Congregations, but rather the neuroscientists are dealing with the structure of human nature. And we can find here scientific explanations of what we're all about. So, read my essay for a systematic analysis of what you're up to at SI and why we are a liberal religious tradition. Five, order my book, Learning to Be White. Thank you. And if you want something to read late at night because you're having trouble sleeping, also order The Embodied Self, Friedrich Schleiermacher's Solution to Kant's Problem of the Empirical Self. I wrote The Embodied Self to lay out in historical, theological, and scientific terms why we are a liberal tradition that starts with affect, with human emotions. The second book is an application of that. I went back to school as a journalist intending to write 5 books. One, what is it about human nature that we're missing? That's the first book. It's pure theory. But within it, you'll find a section. Some people have said to me, you know, some people are saying you're really a Buddhist. What I demonstrate in the book is that this null point of consciousness, this zone of freedom, is ours. We don't have to go to the East. And I practice Buddhism, but I'm not a Buddhist. I'm a Unitarian Universalist. We have this zone of freedom, this breath of life. It's our tradition as well. We don't have to go to the East to get it. So there's that in The Embodied Self. And then Learning to Be White, the second book, because I was a journalist when I went back to graduate school, it was, I knew that I had to write a book to test the theory, to see if it were correct. And learning to be white thus is applied theology for me, arguing that the basic content of a racial identity is not a racial issue, but Schmitten emotions. So yes, 5 and 6, in White Order of the Second Book. 7, look for the Tapestry series when it comes out. And 8, look for small group ministry service programs as part of your small relational group stuff. 9, and this is the most difficult part, because the other is pretty pro forma. Know, and I'll read this, that you have a right to feel at home in your own home congregation. Leave SI knowing that you have a right to feel at home in your own home congregation. You have a right to feel at home in your own home congregation. So many of you have told me how difficult it was for you to get into that congregation. It was an endurance test. So many of you have told me, as I've said, how lonely you are there. So you have to know that you have a right to something more there. That's your right. In 1975, when I was at the pinnacle in some ways of my success as a television producer, very well known, Emmys, awards, respect within various communities, lots of power. Every Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, I would cry. I had no idea why I was crying, but every morning, 10 o'clock, Saturday morning, I would cry. And the tears would just flow. These were Schmitten emotions, but I didn't know that I was unhappy. But one morning, as I cried, I said to myself, I'm unhealthy. And then I said something I had never, ever said before in my life. I have a right to be healthy. I have a right to be happy. This is what I'm asking you to say to yourselves this morning. You have a right to be happy in your own congregation. That is your right. And I made a commitment that morning to do everything that I had to do to become healthy and happy. I am asking you now to make that commitment. Only you will know if you've really made the commitment. So I'm asking you to take a moment and make the commitment. You have a right to feel at home in your own congregation. Now, take out pencil and paper, please. And we're going to assume for a moment that all of you have made this commitment. Because, as Kurt Vonnegut says in the opening line of his novel, Cat's Cradle, he says, we must be very careful about what we pretend to be because we are what we pretend to be. So pretend, if you have not yet made the commitment, that you have made the commitment to be well, to be happy, to be at home in your own congregation. In other words, to have SI at home. I now want you to write one sentence, just one sentence, about what you will do to jumpstart, to get your project going. That is, to taking SI home. It has to be something absolutely tiny, and I'll give you an example. Some of you can remember in the 1970s and 80s transcendental meditation, in which you were supposed to meditate every day for 20 minutes. I didn't have 20 minutes, so I never meditated, but I wanted to. And I finally realized if I simply said to myself, every morning, as soon as you get out of bed, you have to sit. Doesn't matter how long you sit, but you have to sit. So I made that commitment that I would do it. The next morning arrived, as it would, and the first thing I did was resist sitting down. I said, what? You can't simply sit? So I intimidated myself into sitting. And as soon as I sat down, I got up. That went on for a week. Sat down, got up. Second week, sat down, 5 seconds, got up. Third week, sat down, 10, 15, 20 seconds, got up. Because time was no longer the issue. The commitment was simply to sit. And my ego was such that I could not allow myself not to do that. That's how tiny I'm asking you, the task I'm asking you to take on, such that your ego will not allow you not to do it. It's that small. I mean, a voice will kick in and say, don't be ridiculous. Okay, find it. One sentence, starting I will or I, right? Got to keep it concrete. So the first word is I. Turn to the person seated next to you, or if it requires three in a group, do it. And very quickly, read the statement to the person. Nervous laughter, no applause, because it's so, we're holding it so deep within us. All we can say internally is,
I will wear my name tag every Sunday and encourage others to do so. I will enter church with intention.
I will be present with those I am following.
I'm fairly new in that particular church. I will welcome ones who are strangers to me.
I will be the change I want to see to the social.
I will facilitate more intergenerational activities. I will think something positive about someone from my church every day.
I will talk to visitors.
I can't tell this group that first church in Pittsburgh, and it really has helped us all overcome loneliness. And I want to share what I've learned in these speaker hours with my covenant group and explore the possibility of maybe becoming a test group for your capital program.
I will continue the conversation.
Three.